Sal flicked up to the surface. He tilted his head to look out on the new day. The sun rose behind a bank of haze in the east, and the wind carried a whisper of rain on the way. A metal taint seemed to stain the air, reminding him of their deadly predicament on Kithrop. No doubt Krydike and his engineers were trying to jury-rig a scheme to get out of this mess. Their plan would no doubt be frightfully bold and clever, and get them all killed. Wasn't it obvious that neophytes at the game of making and conquering couldn't thwart the Galactics, who had been at it for eons? The humans had his loyalty, of course, but he knew them for what they were. Clumsy wolflings, struggling to survive in a dangerously reactionary galaxy. There was an old dolphin saying, "All humans are engineers, and all engineers are humans." It was cute, but patently a lie. Kipiru broke surface beside him. Sal blew quietly, his breath condensing into spray. He lay watching the sunrise until Kipiru's patience wore thin.
"It's daylight, Sal. We shouldn't be out here. We've got to report, and I want food and rest."
Sal affected the role of an absent-minded scientist, as if pulled from thoughts deeper than Kipiru might ever understand.
"What? Oh, yes. Of course, pilot. By all means, I've very interesting data to report. You know, I think I've cracked their language."
"How nice."
Kipiru's reply was semantically Anglic and phonemically a squawk. He dove and headed for the cave entrance. Saud winced at the pilot's sarcasm, but he was unrepentant. "Maybe I've time to finish a few suggestive limericks to intersperse in my report to Denny," he thought. "It's too bad she stays up on the bank of the pool. Maybe today she'll relent." When they got to the bottom of the former drill tree shaft, now lit by a small phosphor bulb, Sal noticed that someone had taken both sleds out of the passage and moored them in the cavern below. But at least one sled was always supposed to be in the pool in case Denny and Toshio had to escape quickly. He hurried after Kipiru up the narrow vertical tunnel. There were two more sleds in the pool at the top. Someone must have arrived from the ship during the night. Toshio and Denny were already down by the water, talking to Kipiru. Sal eyed Denny speculatively, but decided not to start in. "This evening, I'll try to get her to join me in the water. I'll think up a pretext, maybe something to do with the mechanics of the drill tree route. It probably won't work, but the attempt should be fun." Sal spy-hopped, churning his tail to rise up and look about the poolside clearing. The thick brush parted to the south, and two men, one female and one male, approached. Gillian Baskin knelt by the poolside and whistled a trinary welcome. "Constant Kipiru, solid as surf rock, orca defier, chameleon sout, ever adaptable, ever so manlike, under dark squalls, I'd recognize you two. Study in opposites." Kipiru answered in Anglic, a pathetically unoriginal,
"Good to see you, Gillian. You too, Tom."
Sal settled down, uncomfortably aware that he had a reputation to live up to. Unlike Kipiru, he would have to come up with a greeting that matched Gillian's. He would rather have gone someplace to think about Gillian's remark, especially that part about being ever so manlike. Was that a compliment, or was there a touch of pity in Gillian's upper register when she had whistled it? Orley stood quietly next to Gillian. Sal felt as if the man were seeing through him. Sal drew a breath. "Look here, a monogamous miracle. a pair of lovers, silhouetted against the wide sky. Jillian clapped her hands and laughed. Orly smiled briefly, but apparently had things on his mind.
"I'm glad you two Finns are back," he said. "Jillian and I arrived last night, she from Streaker and I from the site where Toshio's tsunami ship crashed. Jill brought you folks a monofilament cable so you can stay in touch with the ship. She'll work with you for a few days on this vital matter of the Kikwi. Also, I understand there are some folks back at the ship who'd like to ask you to collect some data for them. Is that right, Jillian?" The blonde woman nodded. Word of Charlie Dart's demands had not delighted Toshio and Denny. Orly continued. "Jill's other purpose in coming here was to deliver some gear to me. I have to go away this morning. I'll be using a solar glider." Kipiru sucked air. He started to object, but Orly raised a hand. "I know, it's risky, but there's an experiment I have to try in order to see if the escape plan we've put together will work, and since you people are the only ones available, I'm going to have to ask for your help." Sout's tail thrashed under the water. He clamped down to hide his feelings, but it was hard. So hard. So they were truly going to try to escape. He had hoped for better from Orly and Baskin. They were intelligent and experienced, almost mythical agents of the Terrigan's Council. Survivors. Now they were talking madness and expected him to help. Didn't they realize what they were up against? He swam up next to Kipiru, wearing the mask of a faithful, attentive client. But inside, he felt turmoil as he listened to the crazy plan that was supposed to save them from the bug-eyed monsters. Chapter 29 Takata Jim. The ship's council meeting was a disaster. "It is worse than I thought," the vice-captain sighed. "They planned deception to fool deceivers, and veils to cover whales." Katha John tossed his great blunt head in agreement. "I hear the code word for this project is the Trojan Seahorse. What does that mean?"
"It's a literary illusion," Takata Jim replied. He wondered where the bosun had gone to school. "I'll explain some other time. Right now, I must think. There must be another way than this suicide plan Crydike and Orly have devised."
"The captain didn't listen?"
"Oh, he's very polite. Blowfish Metz swam in my wake, point by point, and Crydike listened so nicely to both of us. The meeting lasted 4 hours, but the captain decided to go with Orly's scheme anyway. The Baskin femme has already left with supplies for him." The two stenos drifted quietly for a long moment. Katha John waited for the vice-captain. Takata Jim's tail slashed. "Why won't Crydike even consider broadcasting the location of our find and have done with it? Instead, he and Orly want to try to trick Sophants who have been trapping each other for millions of years. We'll be fried. Compared with this plan, even your idea of blasting forth with all guns blazing is better. At least we'd be able to maneuver."
"I only offer a glorious alternative to his mad venture," Katha John said. "But I would go with your plan. Think, if we were the ones to find a way to save the ship and crew, would not the benefits go beyond simply preserving our lives?"
Takata Jim shook his head. "If I were in command, perhaps, but we are led by this mad, honor-bound genius who will only guide us to doom." He turned away, deep in his thoughts, and swam silently down the corridor to his quarters. Katha John's eyes narrowed as they followed the vice-captain. Bubbles from his blow mouth came out in tiny rhythmic pops. Chapter 30 Aki. It wasn't fair. Almost everybody who counted had been allowed to go with Hikahi to go join the crew working on the Thenonin wreck. The repairs to Streaker were nearly completed, and he was still stuck here, where nothing important was happening at all. Aki drifted at his study station under an air dome near the top of the central bay. Bubbles from below passed unhindered through the pages of a holotext displayed in front of him. Of all the dumb ideas, making him study astrogation while the ship was stuck at the bottom of an ocean. He tried to concentrate on the subtleties of wormhole navigation, but his mind wandered. He got to thinking about Toshio. How long ago had it been since the two of them had time to pull off a decent prank? It must have been over a month since they'd stolen Brukita's glasses and replaced them with Fresnel lenses. I sure hope Toshio's okay. But at least he's doing something. Why did Krydike insist I stay here when they need every decent engineer out of the wreck? Aki tried one more time to focus on the text, but was distracted by a sound. He looked down toward a noisy altercation at one of the food stations. Two Fen were taking turns swatting at each other with their flukes, while a circle of others watched. Aki backed out of the air dome and dove toward the disturbance. "Stop this!" he shouted. "Cut it out now!" He struck out with his own flukes to knock Zapata and Shrika Joe apart. The observers backed away a little, but the combatants ignored him. They bit and flailed at each other. A kicking fluke struck Aki in the chest, sending him spinning. Aki gulped to catch his breath. How did they find the energy to fight in oxy water? He swam up to one of the observers. "Piktau! Piktau!" He bit the fin on his flank and assumed dominant stance as Piktau whirled angrily. It wasn't easy to face him down. Aki felt very young. But Krydike had taught him what to do. When a fin reverts, make him focus. "Piktau! Stop listening to them and use your eyes! Look at me! As a ship's officer, I order you to help me break up this fight." The glazed expression faded from Piktau's face. He nodded. "Aye, sir." Aki was amazed by the fellow's dullness. Drops of blood diffused into a pink stain as the combatants slowed down, trading blows, their gill lungs gasping for breath. Aki collected three more crew fen, swatting and shouting to get them focused. Then he moved in. He got the stenos and the cook separated at last and led them under guard toward sickbay. Dr. McEnany could keep them isolated until he reported this to the captain. Aki glanced up and noticed the bosun, Kathan John, pass by. The giant petty officer didn't even offer to help. He probably watched the whole thing, Aki thought bitterly. Katha John wouldn't have needed to cajole the onlookers. He could have intimidated the brawlers with a growl. Katha John was headed swiftly for the outlock, his expression intent. Aki sighed. Okay, maybe Krydike had his reasons for keeping me around after all. Now that Hikahi has left with the engineers, he needs help taking care of the dregs that are still aboard Streaker. Aki nosed Shrika Joe to keep him moving. The steno squawked an almost primal curse, but obeyed. "At least I've got an excuse not to study astrogation," Aki thought sardonically.
This ends Side 1 of Cassette 5.